Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. The Golden State Warriors are moving on to the Western Conference Finals after sweeping the Utah Jazz, winning Game 4, 121-95 in Salt Lake City. And to continue a Locked On Warriors tradition, Andy Liu of Warriors World came on and we talked for a little bit over half an hour. It was a fun conversation, went in a lot of different directions about this game, the Warriors moving forward, and whatever else we wanted to talk about. And this episode is brought to you by SeatGeek. You can use the promo code LOWARRIORS to buy tickets and get a $20 rebate. I have used it for years to get tickets. SeatGeek, LO Warriors. Thanks for coming on.
We're back again, this tradition. We need to do this a couple more times, but it's good so far.
Yeah, I mean, the tradition not only of you coming on for Game 4 after a sweep, but you coming on for Game 4 after a sweep and starting the podcast before the game is all the way over. Though, full respect to the Utah Jazz for really battling in this game.
And every game in this series so far. It seemed like each one of them could have been one of your typical, like, Warriors 25 point blowouts where they demoralized the team. But even in this game, like you're saying, they were down big to start right away, like they've been every game. They chopped it down to 6 with a chance to cut it to 3 several times. So that was pretty cool. This Jazz team is pretty they got a couple of injuries too, which sucked, but they're pretty fun to watch this series.
And we should probably start with that first quarter, which was pretty ridiculous. Not only did the Warriors play pretty successful offense, they shot 12 of 21 from the field and 12 of 12 from the line, which is really impressive considering this team doesn't usually get to the line that much. But also, I thought the defense did a really good job early. Some of it was Utah missing shots they normally make, but I thought, broadly speaking, Draymond in particular did a very nice job.
Yeah, it was like a mirror of the Portland Game 4 that they had. Less hot shooting, I think. Against Portland, they had a lot of like transition, pull-up crazy threes. This was more like a methodical, Steve Kerr would have loved, type of approach in terms of how they kind of closed this thing out in the first quarter, like that game. But yeah, it was good to see that Durant also didn't play, didn't score in the first quarter. So good to see the rest of the team bounce back after Durant kind of saved them in Game 3, right? The first three quarters in Game 3 before Steph and KD there went off in the fourth. But yeah, it's good to see. Kind of shows you how dangerous they are from an offensive and defensive perspective, with or without Durant, I think, at this point.
He didn't have the best game overall, but I thought it was interesting and unusual that Klay actually had more made shots in the first minute of this game than he did in all of Game 3, because he only made one shot in Game 3 and then had a bunch of free throws.
Yeah, Klay's been weirdly... Is it weird that he's struggling like this? Because we're used to this, right? He's so, like, up and down and hot and cold that we're kind of... His inconsistencies shooting and playing are kind of consistent, I guess, if that makes sense. So you keep waiting for him to blow up in a game or in a game in any series. He kind of struggled against Portland a little bit too. His defense been good though. So maybe you wait until the next round. Maybe he'll play well against the Spurs or the Rockets, who, you know, don't necessarily have the people to guard him, especially after Steph and KD. And then maybe we'll wait to the 1-in-finals, or maybe there's something wrong with him. I don't know. But I think for me, it's probably something along the lines of he's just shots aren't going in. He's not getting shots right now because of how slow Utah plays.
Yeah, and it's not only how slow Utah plays, but Utah is very good specifically at handling those type of shooters because it requires a lot of discipline and effort. They actually did a spectacular job on J.J. Redick in the first round. And while Klay Thompson is a little bit more versatile, he can do a little bit more off the dribble, and he also has a much itchier trigger finger than Redick, the principles are the same, and they executed them really well in both series.
Yeah, I'd like to see them play a little bit quicker when they go to their small unit. That small unit actually struggled in the first half. I think they got outscored by like 8 points in 2 minutes or something weird like that. So they get into sets really slow. They like want to run like off ball action, things like that. And sometimes when they do that, the shot clock runs down to maybe 14 13, you know, around that amount. And then all of a sudden they're stuck, you know, not really doing anything with no motion, and they're stuck maybe running just a pick and roll. Maybe that should be the play that starts it right away. But that kind of allows it to the point where you're not really getting anyone any touches, especially when, you know, Steph and Clay are kind of being held off ball and they're not really getting open. Kind of slows it down, I think, with a small ball lineup.
Right. The Warriors' half-court offense has been surprisingly stagnant at points in these playoffs. I mean, it still is part of that is also good defense, you know, like especially the Jazz. They make teams look more stagnant sometimes than they are. But the way that I'm thinking about it is also just the idea of being satisfied with possessions. So the Jazz sometimes have had this problem too, where it's just like, oh, you know, we got a deep two for Shelvin Mack or something like that. And the Warriors have that with Clay and Draymond, most notably, where they get a shot. It's not the best shot. And they go, okay, let's pull on that with like 12 seconds left on the shot clock. And this team is better than those shots most of the time.
Yeah, I think we disagree a little bit more on this portion, where I'm fine with players kind of shooting and getting that first shot. I don't mind Draymond shooting those type of threes. Maybe not with 20 left on the shot clock. He takes those sometimes. But I'm fine with him shooting them if they're open, even with 15 on the clock, just because you want players to have that type of confidence to shoot those shots, where you don't want them to think about, like, hey, even though this is open, let's get it better. I know that's, like, best-case scenario. But I think for a lot of these players, it's a little bit different, like, for maybe Clay and Draymond outside of, like, you know, you want the Spurs, they're probably playing that type of offense, right? I don't think these guys are like that. I think you want them to just, you know, be as confident as possible, shoot the open shots that they're getting, and not worry too much about anything else, at least from my perspective.
Well, the direct analog to that, and I think that this is why you could have a point there, is the argument that has been made about kind of the Warriors' quote-unquote oracle turnovers, the ones where they're just a little bit too aggressive, and the idea that you can't take that part out of their game without taking out some of the other positives.
Yeah, the oracle turnovers are the best and the worst, because they're fun, right? Like, they come down the court, and Steph is, I think, the largest culprit of this, and it's even better because Steph has these type of turnovers even when they're on the road. But yeah, it's you want them to shoot those, because when they make them, it's awesome. But also, you are taking a part of the human element here, where, hey, if we're not taking these type of shots, we're going to maybe play. The defense gets kind of taken away. Maybe some of the energy is gone. I don't know. I just think from, hey, if I were playing, I feel that way. And obviously, I'm not Draymond or Clay or Steph or whoever it may be. But yeah, I mean, most of the time, and at the end of the day, the talent works out, where that shot that you're getting, that, you know, that 18-foot jumper that Clay is getting, or maybe that Draymond half-open three-pointer, is probably a, you know, a top, you know, 80%, 85th percentile shot for the rest of the NBA. So, you know, that in a vacuum does work out from that end.
I think that's a, you know, that's a fair way of putting it. And also, the Warriors narrowing their margin for error, you know, with things like that, it still might not be enough, it probably isn't, to really make them sweat in almost every series, because they're just that good. And so keeping the players happy and encouraging that spirit and that energy is probably worth it when you have talent as high level. I mean, you might not want that on a less talented team. You know, the idea, you think about the kind of the disciplinarian coaches that really try to break their teams of that sort of stuff. And most teams have to, you know, the way that you win is by not giving the other team as many opportunities. But when you have four all-stars, maybe you just kind of roll with it.
Yeah, and then you look on the other side, and it's not like, I think maybe you think about Houston, and that's a team that's, hey, you kind of roll with all the shots that you want to take, and those players want to take layups and threes. It's not like they want to take mid-range shots, right? So it's like, hey, we'll let these guys run with it on offense, right? But then you look on the other side, and it's like, well, those guys don't play any defense. And maybe it's because, hey, the coach doesn't want to, the players don't want to, whatever it may be. But for the Warriors, kind of most of the time, regardless of whether they take those shots, whether they make them, on the defensive end, it's there. And I think with the teams left and the rest of the NBA, they're probably the best defense with respect to the Spurs. I think the Warriors are a lot better just in personnel schemes and what they can do when they actually are locked in. So it's not like, you know, regardless of whether those shots are bad or maybe not as bad as before, but like they did today. I mean, the Jazz aren't a good offensive team, but the Warriors have the type of defense at this point that's going to be able to lock anyone down, maybe besides the LeBron and the shooters in Cleveland.
I'd push back a little bit. The Jazz can be a good offensive team, but they're also not all the way there. And also, you know, Hood didn't have his best series at all. He ended up getting a knee sprain and leaving this game a little bit early. But the Warriors offense, or sorry, the Warriors defense can make other teams' offenses look bad. And I agree with you that the Warriors defense is substantially better than the Spurs because of their versatility. Like, the Spurs did a nice job, especially with like their bench defense, of executing, but you need to do more against the best of the best. And I think the Warriors personnel there is a lot better. And also remember that I think their best defensive lineup is still probably the Draymond at five now. I think that's one of the differences between this year and last year. And they haven't really used that lineup that much now. And so they're getting this production without going to some of their most dangerous stuff.
Yeah, that was fun today. I mean, though, Mike Brown did play. He made a couple different adjustments. I don't know if Kerr would have done the same thing. And I don't really know if it worked. But KD started the fourth quarter. I don't think they put a huge number on the lead. Or they didn't expand the lead until he actually went out a couple minutes later. They also went small ball Draymond at the five to close the third. Small ball, but with Livingston in, but still. Which is not something that Kerr has done in the regular season. Obviously, Kerr hasn't coached here extended in the series or last. But Kerr has only played the small ball lineup 3 minutes per half. And even there were games where he didn't play it at all in the regular season. So at this point, I think either him or I know he's been speaking to Mike Brown, so maybe they've thought about this. Hey, when in doubt, just go small. But the Warriors have been going to it more, which is kind of what you expect, but still good to see, I think, because when things get pressurized in the playoffs, they really do need to just roll with that lineup, regardless of whether they play well or not, because that's what's going to give them the best shot. Unless you want to see JaVale shoot those 15-footers.
Yeah, that was wild. I mean, I just started cracking up when he took that shot, just kind of like, okay, you know, they're going to pull some things like that. And that actually ties in with something I wanted to talk about, which was we could go either in this series or this game or the playoffs in general. How are you feeling about the Pachulia-McGee-West trio right now?
JaVale has outplayed all the other two, I think, you'd have to say, right? Even though it's small sample size of minutes, but Zaza kind of had a small sample size of minutes as well. The one you trust, I think, is and the one the rest of the Warriors fans will trust is David West, right? He was not good on defense today, but he's solid passing. He's got a reliable jumper, and he can pass on. He can pass on defense for minutes at a time, not extended, but for minutes at a time. And Zaza's been all right, so I guess I trust West. And then maybe JaVale if you're down a little bit or you need a jump. And then, obviously, when it comes down to it, you don't want any of them seeing the floor. But it is weird. I don't want to throw this off on a tangent, but I am excited to see Damian Jones next year get run because with his athleticism and the way he can move his feet, I think he'd be something like a JaVale right off the bat, maybe without the same finishing ability, but a lot more potential in the defensive end, so that'd be fun to see. I know that has nothing to do with the playoffs.
It is interesting, and I've thought about that. Kind of one of the metrics that I talked about before the season as a way of measuring success for this year was whether Jones or Looney could prove themselves worthy of a rotation spot. And while we're not all the way there yet, well, we're really far from that with Looney, but even with Jones, the idea of a 10-minute a game big who just hustles and gets down the floor, like I think that there's a reasonable chance from what I've seen and also what he did in the D League that he could be that. And that might seem small, but when you consider how hard the Warriors had to hit, or how well they had to hit on West and Pachulia, and McGee, actually, it makes that a lot easier if you only have to get two as opposed to three.
Yeah, and you'd probably assume that at least some other veteran would probably want to end up signing too. So that'll make it, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of, you. As long as you get squeeze enough minutes out of these guys in the regular season, so Draymond doesn't injure himself, and in the postseason, even I think they're preserving minutes even at these Draymond at center lineups in the postseason, which is crazy to think. Just because of the way that, hey, they're going to win these series regardless at this point, and now they get another week off. Where I think, and the Cavs are too. Like LeBron's playing 42, 45 minutes per game over there. What I think is going to be the most fascinating is, I think, fingers crossed, knock on wood, that for the first time in the last 2 years, that the Warriors and Cavs can come into the finals, you know, both rested, both completely healthy, and both ready to go for a series. Because we haven't seen that before. We've seen each team win once, but we haven't seen them both healthy.
We have not. And as you mentioned, LeBron's playing about 42 minutes a game. Draymond Green before tonight, and it's still true after tonight, was the Warriors' leader in minutes per game, and he's 25th in the playoffs at, I think it's like 35 minutes a game. And it's just a fundamental difference between the way those two teams approached it. I'm not criticizing necessarily Ty Lue for it, because as long as you can get out of the series in four, you're not putting that many miles on LeBron overall. And they're not giving him these crazy defensive assignments. But going to take a quick break from the conversation to tell you about SeatGeek. The Warriors will not have another home game for a little while, probably about a week, but a great way to see the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals, should they make it, is to do so in person. I'm a big fan of in-person basketball and in-person sports in general. Great way to do that is SeatGeek. SeatGeek is my personal way of buying and selling tickets, has been for a while, because they are an aggregator, which means you don't have to go multiple places to look for tickets, and because their deal score gives you the best options right at the front. So whatever you're looking for, if you're looking for an unusual number of tickets, if you're looking for something specific, deal score will put you in the right direction quickly, so you can be on your way and focus more on getting to the event or doing other things you enjoy instead of stressing about tickets, which can always be frustrating. And to make it even better, you can go download their free app, go to the settings tab, enter the promo code LO Warriors for Locked On Warriors, and you will get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So you just go in, input the code, and then when you buy your first tickets, you'll just get $20. It's pretty awesome. And also, doing so tells them that you came from us, so it's a great way to keep them advertising with us and keep this show going. So again, SeatGeek, LO Warriors promo code. Now back to my conversation with Andy. Who is your most valuable player of this game?
So today's game?
Yeah. I can answer if you want to take some time.
Yeah, go ahead.
For me, it was Draymond. I thought that Draymond's defense was very important, and it gets into the idea that there's a lot more to defense than the stuff that we can measure statistically. I thought that, especially early, he did a really nice job contesting on drives, affecting shots, getting rebounds. Of course, rebounds can be measured. And that was a big element of Utah getting off to such a shaky start.
I agree. I'd agree with that. I'd argue, hey, there's a little part of it where it's always going to be Steph for me, just because of the way, the way that they, not blow that lead, but they kind of gave it away slowly. And even when you're looking at KD on the floor with the bench with Draymond and Clay, and you still see them struggle a little bit on offense, that's crazy to see. Just how much, a part of it is that, hey, KD hasn't played with them a lot this season, or in his career, obviously, and Steph has. So it's crazy, but it's still crazy to see that this team really can't score when Steph is off the floor. Regardless of how much talent you can put on there, they'll still struggle. So I'll always have Steph as the MVP. I always think he's the most important. I know that some people argue that Draymond is. But yeah, I mean, that defensive presence that he had, Gobert had trouble finishing over him. Favors had that one dunk. But really, the rest of the team were, rest of that Utah team kind of drove away from him in the paint, and they were shooting weird, like 6-foot footers. I think Mac made like three, but that's the shot you wanted to take, unless you're Tony Parker or Chris Paul, right? So, they had a lot of that Jazz team shooting very weird shots in the paint and not going straight in. They were going straight into the paint in game one. And then they really, by the time game four came around, this game, like you were saying, they had quick feet. When they got around the rim, kind of like, you know, when a quarterback is getting hurried in the pocket. So they had a lot of that, which is crazy to see that, you know, when the announcers were saying that, hey, Draymond's at center, Warriors don't have any rim protection, you got to take it to the rack. And you're like, well, I mean, that's what you think, but then you look at the players and they're not taking it to the rack for a reason. It's because the guy is 6'5", you know, tops, but probably one of the best, if not the best, rim protection player in the NBA.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. A stat on Steph, what I think is pretty amazing. So in the playoffs, they don't have today's Steph in on the media stat site yet for logical reasons. The game just ended. But the Warriors have scored 20 points less per 100 possessions when Curry's been off the floor. And some will say, oh, well, that's a lot of that's garbage time. It is. Some of it is garbage time, but it's also 15 points per 100 less in the first half, which obviously includes no garbage time unless you include the second quarter of Portland game four.
Does it ever surprise? Is there a stat that Steph has had on offense that ever surprises you, I guess? Or maybe it always does. Or maybe it always surprises because it's so crazy.
I haven't run the numbers recently, but something I've been maintaining all year is the career three-point makes, including the playoffs, because Basketball Reference separates it. And he's going to get close to starting to pass some heavy hitters, not all the way into like the top four or five, but because he's going to start really ratcheting up his playoff threes now, like compared to a lot of these other guys, it's pretty impressive. Like, he's going to finish his second NBA contract, not only in the top 10 of regular season made threes a career, but also I think he's going to be beyond top 10 in playoff ones.
And I'm looking at the inside the NBA right now. He got 30 points on 15 shots.
Yeah,
he's also and really he hasn't actually even played up to his best abilities in my mind so far in these eight games in the playoffs. What's funny though is that he's doing this. He's doing the bullcrap James Harden, Russell Westbrook type of when somebody gets near you or gets close to your hand, you know, you swing your arm up and draw a foul. Complete trash. Should never be a foul. I mean, should be a foul, shouldn't be a shooting foul, or maybe it shouldn't even be a foul. But now he's doing that. So at that point, if he's able to make contested threes, he's able to get to the rack. You have to double him. And now you're also giving him those type of calls, which he obviously deserves because even mediocre players are getting them in the NBA. Then how are you able going to stop the guy? You know, the type of efficiency like today, 30 points on 15 shots is just completely ridiculous. And again, I think he's played not even his best games yet in the playoffs. I think he still has a lot left in him. So that's good to see again, because he did struggle a little bit 2015 finals. He struggled a lot last year with the knee. And then so maybe this is the year that he'll kind of, for those people that think that Steph struggles in the postseason, maybe he'll show out a little bit more this time.
As a basketball fan, it was concerning to see him go after that sort of foul drawing. But at the same point, if they're going to call it, it's a competitive advantage. And also, I was thinking about just the way that he doesn't get calls off ball. And it might change that dynamic in terms of whether you want him on or off the ball. If they're not going to call the grabbing and the pulling that happens there, maybe you balance that out to a point. And I'm not justifying it. I wish those fouls were never called in the first place. But getting those free throws that way, I guess it does kind of counter it.
Yeah. You'd like to see it both ways, but we know he's not getting those off-ball fouls. And maybe in the postseason you shouldn't. But, I mean, anyway, you should get him on the ball. I think as much as possible anyway. If you were a Warriors fan, you want to see Steph handling. So you never really want him off the ball. But again, with the balance that they run, it's hard to get everybody the ball. As Rudy Gobert once greatly said, there's only one ball in Golden State. How will they ever find a way to share it?
It is strange to come out of this series with a lot higher opinion of the Jazz just because it was a sweep. And I think all of the games ended up being double-digit wins. But Utah had some great moments in this, and I'm really hoping that they're able to keep it together, though that is going to be more complicated.
Do you think that I like the Jazz, and I thought that they could have given the, I thought they could have made the Western Conference Finals if they were fully healthy. Obviously, they would have to be a different seed for that to happen. But do you think, because I feel like they might need Dante Exum to take a step, needed to regardless, but I also think that they can't do that if George Hill is on the team. I think George Hill kind of restricts that type of potential that they could have, and maybe he could bring him off the bench if Exum hits his ceiling. But if you're assigning him, you're also paying him $20 million a year, and he's not going to come off the bench for $20 million. So isn't that kind of a weird? That might be a weird little thing they have there. Also, they lose Ingles likely, right? Favors too. So. And then Hood's always kind of hurt. So they do have a lot of players and they do have some potential, but then there's also a weird cap to it at this point. And they do need to find another way to get another star player in there. And it has to be Exum, right? Or needs to be.
He's probably their best shot at it. I think they can get there otherwise, but you bring up a good point, which is that Utah's offseason really depends on two different things. What Gordon Hayward wants, and that we can't know right now, and their ownership's willingness to pay, because they can stay very, very good, but it's going to be really expensive. And Utah is, you know, Salt Lake City is a small market team. They have the team in a trust. It's this whole complicated thing with the Miller family, and they can keep it together. The benefit of drafting well is that you get the right to retain those guys. I mean, Gordon and George Hill are both unrestricted free agents, but you know, if you pay them, they'll probably stay. But Favors is going to get expensive, more expensive than he is now because he signed that pretty cheap extension. Exum has one more year on his rookie scale contract. Rodney Hood has one more year on his rookie scale contract. So if they want to keep this together, they're looking at a very big bill, maybe not this coming year, but the year after that. And that's why ownership in their situation and in the Warriors situation, to be candid, need to be really honest with themselves about not only what they're willing to pay, but is there a threshold where that willingness changes? Like, I don't think Joe Lacob loves paying the luxury tax. I don't think any owner does. But it's a lot easier to do that when you have a team that is a contender or a title favorite than it is for a team that's a little bit more nebulous.
Yeah, it's a little easier when apparently you get paid for it gets easier if you get extra home games, right? With what the Warriors have done for the last couple of years in the postseason, and Game 5 and Game 7 last year too.
No. I wonder if there's any part of them that of ownership that's a little bit frustrated that they didn't get any extra home games in the first and second round just because of the amount of revenue that came from that. And if you remember last year, they won in 5, I think, twice.
Right. So they got. Right, they did, yeah. So, and then they got a 7-gamer, and then they got 2 7-gamers.
Right, so 2 5s and 2 7s. So they had played 2 more extra home games at this point, and then we obviously don't know the rest because it hasn't happened yet. But it's a small thing, but it's also a little bit funny that the team might be too good to make their ownership maximum money, though. It's kind of like at that point, the Scrooge McDuck mound of money to jump into is just it's just a little shallower. It still exists.
Yeah, it'd be funny if the 3 home games that they're not going to get, it's going to cost them Andre Iguodala here in the offseason when KD decides to take his pay cut anyway. No, I'm kidding. But you make a good point in terms of just the market is going to make it a little difficult, I guess, as well with Utah. But who knows? I mean, who knows what Gordon Hayward wants? Maybe he'll go to Boston, what all Boston fans want. But yeah, I really enjoy that team. It's gonna suck though if they can't align the stars, the stars' potential, and how they grow into it with the stars that they already have on the team. So I'm just hoping that Exum gets there. And like you said, if he can't make it until after this rookie scale contract, and he has to sign with another team and gets there, you know that's gonna suck for them. So. Yeah, I'm hoping they find a way because they have the type of defense with Gobert. I was shocked that Hayward was able to score. I'm a huge Hayward fan. I was shocked he was able to score against his team, but he did. That back leg kind of fadeaway that he has is one of the more unstoppable moves that I've seen. Or I shouldn't say unstoppable. One of the better offensive moves that I've seen in the NBA this year. And that's something that's going to work in the postseason moving forward. They just need more pieces around them.
What separates very good offensive players from great offensive players in the NBA is your ability to produce against talented defense, against guys that are tough matchups. And what Gordon Hayward proved in this series, more so than in the Clippers series, is that he can do so. That he fits in that. And part of what makes the Warriors special is that they have a bunch of guys like that. You know, Klay Thompson can do that. Kevin Durant did that in this series. Steph Curry can, of course, do that. And then as a team, they're able to break opponents down and get other looks. But it was so encouraging to see Gordon Hayward do some of that in this series.
Yeah, that's why when you see Dante Exum driving down the lane, I keep harping on this, when you see him driving down the lane, they're nicing through the Warriors defense in the second quarter. That's something that you can hope is going to bring them to an extra level. And then you hope that when that does happen, that they get some type of supporting players because you don't want it to end up to where you're the Clippers, right? You've got 3 main guys, and then you don't have anybody else. And yeah, it's going to be interesting too. Now I'm thinking about it. How good is the West going to be next year? I mean, you think about there's, you know, Memphis is done. You would think Spurs gets another year older. Utah's got a lot of questions. Clippers are going to be broken up, if not have, you know, JJ Redick on at least. So at a certain point, it's the West might be even easier than it was this year. And I don't think this year was easy, I guess. Maybe just the Warriors were that good. But you might be looking at a year from today that we're talking about the exact same thing with the Warriors and Cavs headed together for the 4th rematch in 2018, which would be kind of.
Sorry, the other big difference between the two conferences, and I like that you brought this up, I hadn't been thinking in this direction, is that the teams that are at the top of the West, it's hard for them to get better So Houston can actually add some guys depending on how they want to use their cap space, because they got out of some money by trading Corey Brewer and some other stuff. They could get a little bit better. The Jazz could stay about the same, but they could get healthier, which would make them better. And they're young, so they're not going to age out of it. But the older teams like the Clippers and the Grizzlies aren't going to, you know, they're going to be worse. And then the young pups, the teams that are going to be good in the future, Minnesota is one of those, Denver, those teams aren't there yet. They're going to be better, but they're not going to be there yet. So it could be you're in transition, and the West doesn't have a team like Boston that is good and just has a boatload of assets that they can turn into improvement.
So who has it easier next year? Who do you think?
I think the Warriors do. I think they'll have a tougher... they'll have a tougher second round series, but maybe an easier conference finals than the Cavs do, assuming health and all that, all the stuff that we can't say is going to be even.
Yeah, it is crazy to think that. I've relented a little bit because I always think, hey, the East is always going to be easy, right? And at a certain point, I think the Warriors are going to beat down the competition to a point where you get guys like the Raptors, you can see them give up. You can see them mail it in. You can, like, you're hearing Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan basically saying that they can't beat the Cavs. That, hey, you know, I'm gonna, you know, they've got LeBron. If we had LeBron, we win too. Blah blah blah. Right. I think the Warriors in their third year, likely gonna make another finals, but not like LeBron. You know, not the 35 years in a row that he's made the finals. I think at a certain point, a couple of years down the line, maybe the Warriors do this a couple times again, their opponents are going to be ones that are going to be like, hey, you know, we just can't beat Steph and KD. We just can't beat somebody like Draymond, right? I think Damian Lillard maybe has a little bit in him with what he said in the first series. And I think James Harden, if he gets to the finals, he'll probably lose again. That'll be the third time in the postseason that he's lost to the Warriors. So I think at a certain point, the Warriors will have that type of mental advantage that LeBron has over the East. I think they'll have it in the West too. I just think it might take a couple more years. Especially, they haven't beat the Spurs yet either. To no fault of their own, Spurs can't get there. So they haven't beat them yet. But yeah, the rest of the teams, you know, they might still think they have a chance. But we'll see how all that type of a hope lasts. Because we know that LeBron has snuffed out all of that in the East.
The other part to consider there is that, remember, the Cavs have run roughshod through the East. Some of that is also due to injuries, the Hawks getting hurt, a couple other teams. Cleveland has only gone to 6 games twice. Every other series they've had since LeBron got back was a sweep. The Warriors got pushed a little bit in that Memphis series 2 years ago. They went to 7 against OKC last year. So they had these, you know, they've had some little moments. I mean, they never went to 7 the year they won the title, but they haven't looked invulnerable yet. But that might come this year. You know, if they 4 or 5 games, let's say they go through the next opponent, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if we say that it does, then then you start to look at that and go, crap, like, what is it going to take? And those are actually really valuable things, because the other spillover benefit is you narrow the pool of teams that ring chasers will want to go to. And so there will always be David Wests, and I'm not criticizing them for doing this. There will always be guys like that who want to play on a team that has a real shot of winning a championship. And the shallower you make that pool, the more likely you are to get those guys.
Yeah, that just becomes unfair at that point. I know you make a good point, I think, though, in regards to invulnerability or vulnerability for the Warriors. I think that even the title that they did win, there were a couple times that you thought that they could have lost Memphis, like you said, and the Cavs down 3-1. And then last year, despite the fact that they won 73, there was a point not even in the finals of the Western Conference Finals that I think they were the worst team. I think we talked about this before. They should have lost that series. I think they were better than the Cavs, and they were worse than the Thunder. So that was, regardless of how great these guys look and how great they play, yeah. I mean, they have had issues in the postseason, like where someone like a LeBron-led team doesn't in the East. So that is interesting. And again, I think they won 2 4 game sweeps, and I think they'll get another one in the conference finals. So they just need a couple more years of that before the same thing goes on in the West.
The other one that could turn it, and if this happens, is, I don't think it'll be this summer, but if it's next summer that Durant signs a long-term deal with the Warriors, let's say he signs for 3 or 4 years at that point, then teams start to sit there and go, oh crap, like, they're gonna, you know, maybe Clay or Draymond leaves, who knows, it's so far into the future, but the idea of Steph re-upping this year and then Durant re-upping next year, which is the most likely because he just can't get as much money this year, that idea, even if those guys are then post-prime a little bit, because they'll be, I think they'll both be 30 at that point. They're still going to be awfully good if they're healthy.
And what's crazy is, obviously, we think that LeBron's going to age well just because of his IQ. He can shoot, his size, his strength. But you look at the Warriors, and out of the four people that they have, out of the four superstars, three are going to age as about as well as you would want. Steph, Klay, and KD, right? And Draymond's probably the guy you have to worry about just in terms of the way that he plays. He's probably prone to injuries, the way that he's going to play in the future. But he has the IQ, and he has the to make himself a serviceable player past his prime. I'd like to think some type of a prime Boris Diaw maybe when he was with the Spurs. So yeah, I mean, we're looking down the line here, 4 years, 5 years maybe. But if they all stick together, the Warriors are going to age really well together. They're still going to be able to play. And they're still going to be a scary team 5 years from now. At least that's what you would think.
Yep, you never know. But I think there's certainly an argument to that. Anything else you think we need to talk about from this game or this series?
No, I could take another week off, so I feel good, Danny.
Absolutely. Thanks again for taking the time.
I appreciate it. Take care. See you after the next week.
Thanks again to Andy Liu for taking the time to come on. You can read him at Warriors World, and you can follow him on Twitter at Andy K.H. Liu. That's AndyKhLiu. Love talking with him. Who knows if we'll be able to continue this tradition in the Western Conference Finals. We don't even know who the Warriors are going to be facing in that. If people are interested, I might do another watch guide for Spurs Rockets. I'm guessing that would be for game 6, not game 5, because game 5 is tomorrow. But if people are interested, let me know. If not, let me know that as well. Always, your input is exceedingly important to me. And I wanted to take just a minute to thank everybody for a milestone that I really do appreciate, and that I didn't make a big deal about it at the time. I didn't tell anybody at the time, which was when David Locke approached me about doing Locked On Warriors. Well, it was actually a while back, but then when I decided I was going to start it, I had kind of this goal in my mind of, man, it would be really cool to get 1 million listens for a year on a specific team. I thought, I don't know why it was that threshold that I was just fixated on. It also helps that Audioboom keeps good records of this, so it was easier for me to track. And so I had a private goal of saying, oh, it'd be really cool if we got to 1 million listens. And that happened this morning, and it really is incredible when you think about just the undertaking of this, and not only for me, but the Locked On Podcast Network and everything else like that. But it's been a wonderful run, and it's not over yet. It's far, far from over yet. This is not a victory lap in any way, shape, or form. It is just a step along the journey. But I am so deeply appreciative of the support, not only for the people who are listening, but for spreading the word and everything like that. And it has been such a pleasure this year to do it. And of course, having the opportunity to cover this team and to talk about this team has made it a lot easier, made it a lot more fun than some of the other ones that I've covered, much less some of the other ones that are around the league. So appreciative of everybody, and let's keep it going. There's a lot more, hopefully, basketball to be played. And if you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, at Danny Larue on Twitter. Trying to figure out what I want to do the rest of this week. Still plenty to talk about, so I might run through some things, just working on everything else. And also, if you want to support the show, leave a rating, leave a review, and you can also subscribe, download every episode. Those things are great. Also, a cool thing that we're doing now with Locked On Warriors is with Plus60DB, which is a startup that's actually based in the Bay Area, they're trying this new idea of kind of smaller, digestible pieces. And so I'm giving them a 4 to 6 minute segment of Locked On Warriors for every broadcast we do. And you can check that out there on Plus60DB, and you can also check out a lot of the other stuff that they have. So we're doing that for the entirety of the playoff run. So I love connecting with startups. It's something that I've really enjoyed about being in the podcast business, especially in the Bay Area. It's a natural connection for all of that sort of stuff. So you can check it out. It's another way of listening to the podcast. You also can and should check out SeatGeek, my personal way of buying and selling tickets. You can download the free SeatGeek app, use the promo code LOWARRIORS for a $20 rebate on your first purchase. And thanks again for all the support. It was a milestone day for me, milestone day for the podcast. Take care and make it a great day.